Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
For the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 238. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. It is your Sunday night edition of Hittin' Season, and we've got your big winter meetings preview. We've been talking about the winter meetings for weeks now, and we've seen some moves already made on the hot stove, but the winter meetings is when things really start to get serious. When everybody gets into one big hotel room, they all put on their footy pajamas, they sit around smoking flavored cigars, and they start throwing player names around, and meeting with agents and all the good stuff starts to happen right now, starting tonight as we're recording this in Las Vegas. We're not expecting any big news here as we're recording this podcast, but the way these last couple of podcasts have been going, you know, they might get a Bryce Harper signing as we're in the middle of doing this. So joining me to talk about the winter meetings, and we're also going to get into a very surprising Hall of Fame election that went down tonight, and a big change coming to Sunday Night Baseball, is Phillies writer for The Good Fight, Justin Clue. Follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hey, buddy, the winter meetings are finally here, man. Did you get all your winter meeting shopping done before we get started tonight?
Just right under the wire. Another close
good
year,
for you.
I gotta tell you, I love the idea that all of the GMs are arriving, and Matt Klentak is in his room steaming his suit, and John Middleton's cleaning his money. It's a wonderful, wonderful image. I really like that idea. So everybody's
it's a wonderful time of
getting
year.
Their orientation syllabi, you know, checking out what the buffet is gonna be like tomorrow morning. It's nice. You know?
Yeah. No, this is it's great that that it's finally all this build up. I mean, this is a month long. The winter meetings really need to start earlier in the off season, Justin. I mean, this is too long to wait for these meetings. You had the GM meetings a couple of weeks ago, but nothing happens at those things. I don't even know why they bother having those meetings, because really everybody waits until they get to the winter meetings. Why is this so far into the off season? I'll never understand that. They need to move these meetings up a little bit, because baseball's free agency period is. It needs to be a little bit more like the NFL and the NBA. You know, the first day, the first 2 days, like everybody's changing teams. That's when all the stuff is going down. This slow burn is for the birds, man.
Oh yeah, it's a desert, and I gotta tell you, it feels like they have an opportunity there where like everyone is just off baseball, but you can keep them on it by having the winter meetings so much sooner. After the regular season, and people continue talking about baseball. We did learn this offseason that there's a mascots meetings, but that was nothing. That really didn't offer us anything more than a photo op, unfortunately. But if they want to have meetings for every, like, let's talk, what about the chalk line guy meetings? Where were they this year?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Yeah.
Were any decisions made? Did the umpires meet in their little treehouse, in their secret little treehouse that says no players allowed on the outside? Did that happen yet? You know, there's a lot of meetings you could market. And unfortunately, we just get this one, the GM meetings, where nothing happens. And this one, we got to wait so long for. So I'm with you. Let's get the ball rolling a little sooner.
I think it's fitting, too, that the winter meetings are getting started here as the Eagle season officially ended here on Sunday. So the attention can focus to the Sixers, of course, and now to the Phillies. And hopefully they can make a couple of big moves this week. And, and by the way, for those of you who listen to us normally here on Sunday nights, we're normally joined by Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports, our good friend, but she's a little under the weather tonight. So it'll be just Justin and I taking you through the next 45 minutes, hour long of this podcast. So we hope that's okay. But anyway, this is kind of, the time when the free agents are all going to start to come together, and the agents are going to be fighting over different teams' piles of cash. And we've been hearing everything that you read about, everything that you see, is that the Phillies are really driving this thing. And I don't know how much of that is true. You know, we know that the Phillies want to spend a ton of money, and it sure seems like they're connected to everyone, but this has been a slow-moving process. Matt Klentak spoke to reporters just after arriving in Las Vegas here on Sunday and said that this is from a piece by Jim Salisbury on NBC Sports Philadelphia. He said, "We're open-minded to a lot of different things. We're going to look in a lot of different directions. It could be in the form of a big-ticket free agent. It could be in the form of trades or other areas. The name of the game is trying to get better, and that's what we're trying to do. I'm expecting an exhausting week." So, again, Matt Klentak does this, Justin. He doesn't give you much. He doesn't let you. He's not John Middleton, where he tells you he's going to spend stupid amounts of money. He's very guarded, and that's probably very smart for a man in his position. But the sense is here, I think, that you get that the Phillies, according to Jim Salisbury, seem to be more interested in Manny Machado at this point. What he wrote is, I think the Phillies remain interested in Harper and will surely meet with Boris this week. But at the moment, Harper appears to rank below Machado on the Phillies' wish list. Of course, things can change in a hurry at this time of year, Salisbury writes. Does it surprise you at all that the Phillies still seem to be targeting Manny Machado as their favorite over Bryce Harper? Or, I mean, of all the guys, I think Salisbury of the beat writers is the most plugged in of any of these guys with his finger on the pulse. But you hear a lot of the national guys, too, who, I don't know, maybe their fingers on the pulse as well. They all seem to think it's going to be Harper. So where are you at on Harper Machado? Do you think that it's Machado over Harper right now?
I mean, like you said, we know far less obviously than somebody like Jim Salisbury. So if they're saying that Machado is being favored over Harper right now, then, you know, we have no choice but to believe them. Obviously, we've been talking on this podcast. I feel like we've almost talked it into reality that that Bryce Harper is who we'd rather see if it's one of the two, just because it's what makes most sense in your head. Otherwise, and we brought this up on Continued Success that really, when you get down to it, at third base for the Phillies next year, it's either going to be one of two guys, more than likely, Manny Machado, who they have to talk into or offer enough money to play a position he said he doesn't want to play, or Michael Franco,
right?
Or, you know, it could be a third party, but that would be, you know, somebody who we haven't talked about, you know, some like Mike Moustakas kind of free agent guy out there that's not nearly as sexy and doesn't have the added benefit of being a guy who is coming off his first real big step forward developmentally. So yeah, I'm a little surprised that it's Machado, just because it seems like, yeah, they have some space to fill in the outfield. They have Bryce Harper available. Bryce Harper has, you know, done his part saying how much he loves Philadelphia. He definitely didn't have to, the way Manny Machado had to come forward and back off his comments made during the playoffs. Bryce Harper didn't have any moments like that. He slots well into the lineup. He hits well at Citizens Bank Park. Mm-hmm. And the Phillies have the money to pay for him. And the Nationals sound like, you know, they pretty much surrendered on the radio the other day. So yeah. It sounds like that, without kind of just becoming real, it's just one announcement away from being real. But if they're favoring Machado over Harper, then they'd see something they like there, and they really think they can give him the money that makes the position he doesn't want to play more appealing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I believe that. This isn't groundbreaking of announcement or anything, but this all comes down to money, and the Phillies have rumored so much of it,
yeah,
that they'd be able to convince anyone to play anywhere, I would imagine. So if they think they can, then we'll see how effective their negotiating can be. But that's what makes this so interesting. And that's, you know, the key point is what he added at the end of the story, that at this time of year, anything can change very quickly.
Right. And obviously they're going to have conversations. They've probably already had conversations. I really wonder if money has been thrown out there. I really do wonder if, you know, they've already, obviously players have signed. So this is the time of year you start putting numbers down on pieces of paper and sliding them across the table. I got to believe that numbers have already been exchanged, and that you're hearing that, you know, neither player is close to a decision and that neither guy could sign this week. And I know the Phillies had said a little while ago that they're not going to wait around, and they didn't wait around to trade for Gene Segura to shore up the shortstop part. They realized how important a position that was to get that taken care of. And, you know, with Manny Machado, the big problem here is will he play third base? I would imagine if there's only one team offering him more than $300 million and it's the Phillies, he'll play where they tell him to play. Like, you know, if the Yankees are coming up and saying, okay, we'll give you 280, and the Phillies are saying, we'll give you 320, is he going to, you know, is he going to pick the Yankees over the Phillies? That's the question we really don't know. And that's what has me a little bit nervous right now, is I'm just not sure if both of these guys, I think they would just go where the money is the most, but, you know, I'm not sure. At the end of the day, Patrick Corbin went where the money was the most. And so maybe we can kind of hang our head on that a little bit. It's just one guy, but at the end of the day, where, you know, whoever offers the most money is, it's probably where he's going to go. Now, with Machado coming to play third base, I can understand why the Phillies are preferring him over Bryce Harper. I think Machado has a higher floor. You know, if Machado has a poor season, I think it's going to be less of an issue than if Harper has a poor season. Machado just does a lot of different things well, and if they're playing him at third base, his defense is going to provide so much value. And so I think you get a defensive component with Machado at third base, and even I would say at shortstop to a degree, than you do with Bryce Harper in right field, who the defensive metrics were awful for Harper this year. But again, I don't know how much I believe in the metrics. There were a couple of pieces out last week where I think Mike Petriello and somebody else did separate looks at Harper's defense in right field, and it basically just showed a guy who didn't really exert himself in the outfield last year, that he almost didn't want to get hurt, that he was basically trying to protect himself, it seemed like, ahead of in his walk year. And you know, you can argue whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I don't think that was a true level of his talent, what he did in the outfield defensively last year. Nevertheless, Machado's a better defensive player, especially at third base. So for me, I still kind of would rather them get Harper, but I'm starting to warm to the idea of Machado over Harper, because it really locks down the left side of your infield, and I think there are more options in the outfield as secondary pieces than there are if you sign Harper in the outfield and then you're looking to fill a hole at third base or something.
I feel like I'm focusing a lot on the offensive component to signing either of these guys, and in reality, there's not a bad version of this. If we're talking about them signing one or the other, I won't be upset if they sign Machado and not Harper. I'll probably be a little more surprised, but I probably won't have time to be surprised, because that signing will dominate my life professionally and mentally for, about 2-3 weeks. So, you mentioning Machado's defense, I mean, some of the plays he can make from third base that we've seen him make, and just thinking about that in the context of how much the defense cost the Phillies wins in 2018, and how much they stand to upgrade at that position, man, that would be nice. And that's what I mean when I say there's no such thing as bad news when you're looking to sign and likely will sign at least one of these two guys, because Manny Machado makes Brooks Robinson plays from foul territory over there.
And yeah, he does.
That's something you definitely want on this team moving forward. So yeah, I can definitely see the appeal there. I'm ready for. I think you're right though, that we saw kind of like the idea brought up that the chance exists these guys are going to drag this out till March. And I think that's fully plausible. You know, why not? If it winds up being in their best interest to drag this out as long as possible, to squeeze as much money as they can out of it. I mean, that's what they're doing this for. That's why they've been looking forward to it. That's why their agents have been looking forward to it. You know, so this is why this process exists for them. And so if it drags out till March, then that's what it does. But we're definitely going to see some, an uptick in activity during the winter meetings involving the Phillies. I'm sure they will come out of this with at least something different on their roster.
Yeah, and I think John Heyman reported that the Yankees and Machado will meet this week, but he's reporting that they will not pay $300 million for Machado, which is insane to me, because the Yankees could print money. They could do whatever they wanted to. They're choosing not to, and maybe they're just trying to bring the price down a little bit, but Heyman mentions the Phillies, White Sox, and mystery teams all seen as main competitors. So basically, Heyman has basically written that every other team in Major League Baseball is seen as competitors to sign Manny Machado here. You got to name the mystery teams, man. I mean, or how many, you know? It just can't say mystery teams and lump the Phillies and White Sox in there. And then with Harper, Rosenthal wrote that right now the Harper market is Philly bidding against Philly. So I guess the question is, how do the Phillies, if you're Matt Klentak, how do you go about this process? how do you go? I mean, do you basically say to each guy, hey, listen, it's first come, first serve? I would imagine that they've made offers to Machado and made offers to Harper. Would they, if they really prefer Machado and Harper says, yes, we'll do your deal for $350 million over 10 years, whatever it happens, I'm just making up numbers. Do they go back to Machado first? I mean, do they say, hold on a second, Bryce, we got to check in with Machado for, I mean, that's got to be kind of a tricky situation. And that's my curiosity here is, how do you juggle both of these guys? How do you keep both these guys on the hook and let them know, make them both feel like they are the number one target, but at the same time, keeping their options open if there really is one that they prefer over the other, you know?
That's the wackiness of the winter meetings. I'm seeing a lot of like noises off where they just like have one of them in one room and one of them in the other room, and they keep mixing the two up and going back and forth, and there's a lot of slamming doors. You know, hopefully their negotiating tactics involve, you know, tact so that they're able to do that. But I mean, also, yeah, these guys can read and they have social media. They can see what the rumors are and where they're being ranked, even if it is just a reporter saying, I'm hearing that. I'm with you on the saying the Phillies, White Sox, and an unknown number of mystery teams are in on a guy is.
Yeah, what's that?
What is this? The Phillies, come on, man. White Sox, and any other team could be in on this player. Cool. Okay. Let's narrow the field.
This is crazy.
We all have our hourly tweet quotas. I understand that. So we gotta, you know, you gotta fill the internet somehow. But yeah, I guess that would mean what. If they're favoring one of them, I guess that would mean that's what that means. That if they wind up in that position where, you know, Machado says, let me think about it. They get on the line with Harper. He agrees. And then Machado calls back and says, I agree. I'll take it. They suddenly have to make a decision. And if they're favoring Machado, then I guess that's who they would go with. I mean, do you think I go back and forth thinking like, oh, you know, this is a room full of people who are so much smarter than me. They've considered every scenario. They have like, you know, a bunch of index cards or a whiteboard where like a chart is mapped out. Like, if we get this, then we do this, and this guy can fill this thing and this, or is it just kind of like broader where they're like, we need guys at this position who do this well, and we're going to focus on that. And if, you know, if somebody doesn't do it as well, but their numbers across the board are better, then, you know, that's fine. So is it that worked out, or is it just kind of like, well, John wants us to get all the good players and we have infinite money, so let's just see who calls back first. I don't know.
And by saying John, you're not talking about me. You're talking about John Middleton, I would imagine.
Yeah, you don't have any money. I know that.
Yeah, I got nothing going yet. That's right. No, for sure. And, you know, I guess I would certainly think that given how analytically driven this team is, they probably have these guys in order. And they probably have them. They probably have a specific number of years and money in mind that they're willing to spend on these different players. Now, I would imagine that, like you said, Mr. Middleton can probably come in and say, "Yeah, screw that. Give him 12 years and $500 gazillion, whatever he wants." And at which point that goes out the window here. But you know, I think, you know, we hear the White Sox attached to both of these different players, and we know that the White Sox have a lot of good young players. They've made some trades in recent years. It's a really weak division, the American League Central. I heard you and Liz talking about it on the latest Continued Success, which just came out on Friday. And, you know, I think the White Sox are this team that's kind of looming in the background. They're the number two team in Chicago. There's no doubt that they play second fiddle to the Cubs. But the Cubs don't seem to be in the mix for either Machado or Harper. I still think they're laying in the weeds a little bit for Harper, but I'm not 100%. They'd have to move somebody from their outfield in order to make that happen. I think the White Sox, they seem to want to spend some money here. They seem to want to be able to get one of these guys because they recognize that Machado and Harper are at a young enough age that their young prospects can grow with these guys. And the White Sox, if they were to land Harper or Machado and maybe another piece, they could win that division next year. They have enough talent to do that, considering how the Indians are trying to trade a pitcher, and the Tigers and the Royals and the Twins just don't seem to have any forward momentum going here in heading into 2019. Are you worried at all about the White Sox? Because they are the redheaded stepchild of the city of Chicago. I don't know that if you're Machado or Harper, you're going to the number two team in that city. I don't know that that's a big enough draw for Harper or Machado, but I could see, you know, a big enough deal And you could say, listen, you're going to be the star of this growing team in a division that's ripe for the taking. I wonder how, if the White Sox aren't a pretty serious contender here. What do you think about the White Sox kind of lurking for Machado or Harper here?
Well, one of the things we brought up on continued success was the Indians kind of playing down to their division and how bad that is for fans. It's just like, oh, we're in this pretty crappy division right now. We don't have to have as many good players or pay as much for good players to be in contention. We could still win this. So honestly, like the White Sox, probably they need to acquire more talent, but they probably don't need Bryce Harper to win in the AL Central. You know, it's almost like overpay. But at the same time, yeah, he would go a long way in legitimizing whatever they're trying to do in Chicago as the lower market of the two teams out there. So yeah, I'm very interested in them being so involved because they're not a team that makes a lot of these types of moves. One of the little subplots about Jim Thome flying out to Las Vegas to talk to Bryce Harper about the White Sox was really interesting because obviously he has a pretty firm Phillies legacy and played a key role, not just as a member of the Phillies, but in departing the Phillies, kind of ushering in that new era of success. So that was interesting for him to be acting as an advocate for the White Sox when, you know, I guess he could have had that same job for the Phillies, you know, told Bryce Harper, hey, you know, I came out to Philadelphia and was stalked by an electricians union for a while. And they hung around until I agreed to come play for their team. So in conclusion, come on out to Philly and they'll treat you right. I'm very interested and curious about what the White Sox are doing, what they hope to accomplish, and how real their threats to steal Bryce Harper or Manny Machado away, how real those threats really are, because that's a team that doesn't make a lot of moves like this.
By the way, just seeing on Twitter, did you know Phillies owner John Middleton was in Dallas today at the Eagles game? At AT&T Stadium. He's a little distracted, I think, right now. We need to get Mr. Middleton focused again, right? You know, he needs to, now that, you know, put the Eagles aside, man. Let's get laser focused here in the hot stove, man. So listen, I think the other team that is kind of a main contender for Los Angeles that nobody's really talking about is the Dodgers, because you hear the Dodgers want to trade Yasiel Puig or Matt Kemp or Jock Peterson. Right now, they don't have space for Harper in the outfield, but if they move one of those guys or move one or two of those guys,
speculation
suddenly,
will be off and running. Absolutely.
Yes. Well, and they would have an outfield mm-hmm. spot ready for him. And, you know, I mean, I can't imagine that. I mean, I think Harper probably wants to, well, I mean, Harper's from Las Vegas. You know, Los Angeles is just a stone's throw. You know, it's a quick car ride to Vegas. I mean, that would be a scenario that maybe if Harper isn't quick to sign here, if Harper doesn't sign during the winter meetings and the Dodgers haven't traded either of these guys yet, wouldn't it all surprise me if they're just kind of waiting around for the Dodgers to do something with their outfield to maybe create a position, a spot, an opening for Bryce Harper to play there? Because that would seem to be a really good fit. The only reason why we don't talk about the Dodgers a lot is because they don't have any room for Bryce Harper. And maybe the Phillies recognize that, and that's why they're targeting Manny Machado. Maybe they see fewer teams in on Machado, but if you also heard Rosenthal saying that right now it's Philly bidding against Philly, and that is also the reason why Boris is waiting around right now. I think the Dodgers, if they move one of those two guys, they might even jump ahead of the Phillies as far as contenders to
sign
Harper.
Yeah, and being the same kind of team situation, both similar in strategy, you know, they both, he's clearly willing to, I don't know. I kind of wonder about this because the Phillies, you know, tried to do something this past year. They tried to emulate the sort of analytics driven matchup based baseball that Dave Roberts was running out there in Los Angeles. And I do wonder how, like, a megastar or two fits into that. Like, if you're really going to be able to convince a guy like that, like, to be part of a system, or does he just exist outside of it because he's Bryce Harper? But yeah, no, in any case, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought.
Dodgers. Yeah.
How much, I feel like this comes up a lot, just more and more, the idea that a guy, when he enters free agency, really values the idea of being closer to where he's from. like, because we know on his baseball reference page where he was born, that somehow is like insider information as to where he will wind up. And I'm sure that that exists to some degree. Sometimes you have somebody, I believe, like Cliff Lee, part of the reason he came to Philadelphia the second time was because of the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, which, you know, sometimes you're motivated by personal reasons like that. Absolutely. But I don't buy it that it's so often something like that. Like I've been talking a lot lately.
Yeah. Well, look at Patrick Corbin, Justin, look at Patrick. Yeah. Look at that. It's a perfect example.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that kind of brought up, I had just written a story about Mike Trout and how, you know, it's really striking me as pretty silly that it gets brought up how big of a Phillies fan he was when he was growing up. And that is going to contribute to where he decides to go in 2 years when he's a free agent. Like that's, I just can't fathom that a adult baseball player's childhood fandom is factoring into his decision to where he's going to spend like the remainder of his career. And Bryce Harper's 26 years old, you know, like he's not thinking about like packing it up, going back to the homestead at this point.
He's a grown married man now.
You know, he knows how this works. He's been playing in DC for years now. Yeah. Like, I just wonder, because we hear that brought up an awful lot. And I just honestly don't want to just, I don't want another team to be brought in on the Bryce Harper thing. I've already got it locked in my head. It's like, all right, Phillies, you know, they're pretty much running the show. It's just them and the White Sox and then whatever mystery team, blah, blah, blah. But you're right. And that's what's going to be so stressful about these winter meetings, that there are teams like the Dodgers and there are teams like the Cubs, and they're just, you know, they're going to do something because they're not like out of it. They're not one of these low AL Central teams that's just kind of like, blah, 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 whatever. Winter meetings, did we even get invited? Who cares? Like, these are teams that are looking to make moves and contend. So they're going to make things interesting, but I don't want to think of it as any more complicated than the Phillies just sort of running the show right now.
No, I hear you. And I think that's exactly right. I mean, these are grown adults, and they're going to probably decide on this in this order: the money, the years, the competitiveness of the team, and then any personal benefit that they might get out of it, such as being close to home or something like that. But as
the other thing I was going to bring on, not to your point, guaranteeing to Bryce Harper that in Chicago, like, hey, you'd be the star at the beginning of this team, like taking a big step forward. He's been that in DC, and I'm sure like there's aspects of that you want to, you know, have in your life. I'm sure there's clearly benefits to being the most popular young sports star in town. At the same time, having experienced that, both of them, for so long in other cities, do you really think like they would mind joining a team together and maybe like splitting the fandom in some capacity? I mean, I think we both know in Philly the way both of their brands are right now. I think we both know in Philly that Bryce Harper would be favored over Manny Machado, at least when they start out. Just, you know, the whole hustle thing. But at the same time, these are both guys who, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I know I'm not wrong on Harper, neither of them have any sort of deep playoff success. And I feel like this free agency for them, this is probably when they are looking to scratch that itch, where it's like, look, I've achieved, I've reached the peak of the game. I'm considered a megastar. I've run the table in the town I've played in, and I've really reached, you know, stardom at a young age. Now it's time to start bringing home hardware, like especially Harper, who is, if he leaves DC, leaves having the monkey of never getting out of the first round of the playoffs still on his back.
Right.
So he's got that to deal with. And I'm sure being such a huge competitor, that is something that eats away at him. So I think joining the same team is a great way to do that, to sort of make it more, you know, it's like a LeBron to the Heat moment where it's like, let's just all meet up in one city, win a couple of championships, and then, you know, then deal with our personal stuff after that. Yeah. I don't know. That just seems like the logical course of events.
No, I think you're right. And that's why a team like the Dodgers makes me nervous as far as a landing spot for Harper, because that team's World Series ready. And Harper's got to be hungry for a World Series. He's got to be hungry for a World Series. And I don't know that the Phillies are too far off if they make the right moves this offseason and they get some improvement from a guy like Scott Kingery and Jorge Alfaro next year, provided they don't replace either of those two guys. But I do think that that's something that the Dodgers can offer. They can say, you know, hey, we've been to the World Series the last 2 years. We are a World Series ready team. You make us better as far as being World Series ready. You know, they replace Jock Peterson with Bryce Harper. That's a better baseball team right there. So that's a little bit of the worry I have with Harper and the Dodgers and Machado, of course, with the Yankees. So that was a big, there was all kinds of momentum, you know, during the regular season about the Yankees and Manny Machado. I think there was a, remember that controversy with Aaron Judge trying to talk to Machado about the Yankees and getting in trouble for, not collusion, what? Tampering. Thank you. Yeah. So it's just, it's going to be very interesting. And I know that there's a lot of fans who are really hoping and expecting that the Phillies are going to sign one of these guys this week. Doesn't sound like it, gang. It does not sound like it's going to happen this week. So
keep those expectations nice and low. Just ride that morose melancholy that you have from the Eagles game. Just keep riding that all week. You'll be in a, I shouldn't have to tell you that, Philadelphia sports fans.
No, that should just be a regular part of your daily life, is that morose, nothing good is ever going to happen to us attitude. I think that's where we all need to be right now, but just to guard our hearts. But here's the thing. I mean, I think the thing is, the reason I like Machado, I'm starting to warm to Machado more than I am starting to warm to Harper as an option, is because I do like the outfield options better, like I mentioned a minute ago. And Jim Salisbury mentioned in his piece that came out today previewing the winter meetings that Michael Brantley is a free agent that is in the Phillies' focus. We've talked about him on the podcast, 31-year-old left fielder. He's made the All-Star team three times. He hit .309 with an .832 OPS for Cleveland last year. He says it would not be surprising at all to see the Phillies end up with Brantley. I had Mike Farron from the Diamondbacks and from MLB Network Radio from SiriusXM on the podcast during the middle of the week, and he obviously knows the Diamondbacks really well, and he was raving about A.J. Pollock, noting the fact that he has had some injuries, but just talking A.J. Pollock up tremendously, what a gamer he is. He plays really solid defense, noting the fact that when he got hurt last year, he broke his wrist diving for a ball when he was down six runs in the ninth inning. You know, that's the kind of, he compared him to an Aaron Rowan type player. And that's the kind of guy Phillies fans love. It's just, you worry about the injury history with a guy like Pollock, but I think the talent is there. But these are two options that I really like in the outfield. I like Pollock as long as the years and the money are right. And I like Brantley even more. I think if you could get Machado at third base and then get Brantley or Pollock in the outfield, that to me is maybe a better scenario than getting Harper in the outfield and then Mike Moustakas at third base, or Marwin Gonzalez at third base and Marwin Gonzalez moves all over the place, or Josh Harrison being a guy who moves all over the place, or using Franco at third base and having those guys play all over. If you get Machado at third, Brantley in the outfield, you're getting two stars in these two positions, which really feels like a good pairing to me. It's like a pairing of fine wine and the perfect cheese, Justin.
I was actually going to bring that up, just like scenario A being Brantley instead of Harper in the outfield, Machado at third, and then like some combination of Herrera, Williams, and Quinn in the outfield to go with. I'm happy in that scenario. And then the other one is like Harper out there and Franco at third base. I mean, I'm not unhappy about that either.
Right.
But you're right. The more you say it, it's more like, it feels like more comprehensive, feels like more bases are covered in a Machado and Brantley scenario. Because I mean, you also got Gene Segura now playing shortstop, and then the rest of that space, if the rest of that space were to be filled by existing players on the Phillies roster, that's less spaces for the weaker members of that class to fill. And I think that's a very competitive team. I think that can compete in this extremely sharp-toothed NL East that we're going to experience. So I would be happy with that. Honestly, signing Bryce Harper would be blinding, I think is the word. It's just like, this is great. And then you just look around like, I mean, it's not like they wouldn't do anything else, which for some reason has been a thought on people's minds that like, you know, the Phillies shouldn't just do that. I don't think they ever were just going to do that. But if they signed Bryce Harper, it would be so like, we have Bryce Harper on this team now. Yeah. What else even needs to just skip ahead to the spring? But there are many other areas for the team to improve. And Brantley and Machado, you know, they cover a lot of those problems. Like, I think that's a pretty effective offense at that point. If the Phillies continue to be a team that knows how to get on base, then you add Brantley, Machado, and Segura to that lineup, then I think that's a team that's not only getting on base, it's also scoring runs.
Yeah, when getting hits, they're all 300 hitters, man. That's right. I mean, can you imagine adding three 300 hitters with OPSs over 800 to this lineup?
That's what's cracking me up about the Phillies, is that all the teams we're talking about, it feels like the Phillies are the furthest away from a playoff appearance of any of the Dodgers, Cubs, most of the teams in the NL East, even, I would say. The Phillies just aren't right now, or like at the close of 2018, they were the furthest away, but they're just in all of these rumors because they just have
money.
And they can just, it feels so artificial, mm-hmm. and like unnatural, but they can just buy all these good players, yeah. and slot them in and be a completely different team. Just be like, yeah, that's how it works, man. I don't know. We're not breaking any rules here. It just feels so like fake almost, yeah. that they just get to do that.
Yeah. That they get to buy a team. Yeah. They couldn't develop, mm-hmm. a core. So they're going to just buy the core, you know,
all this time development. How much did you and I and Liz say, this is what development looks like over the course of like three really bad Phillies seasons.
Dude,
and we weren't,
I
wrong.
Made t-shirts. It's about the damn thing. I made it like the centerpiece of a t-shirt store that I had to get rid of. You know what I mean? Like that's, so I was all about trusting the prospects, and now it's, you got to, mm-hmm. trust the wallet.
We wound up with Rhys Hoskins and Aaron Nola.
That's right.
And I think you just come up with a new t-shirt. Trust the wallet.
Like
prospects crossed out. Like we tried that.
It didn't work. That'd be a great idea, actually. No, but see, I think that, and that's the thing. You're right. I think the Braves are ahead of the Phillies right now in the National League East, of course. The Nationals, I think the Nationals are the best team in the division right now. And
yeah.
And the New York Mets kicked the Phillies' butts last year and got better. Mm-hmm. I still don't think the Mets are awesome. I mean, adding Diaz and Cano is good. Don't get me wrong. That's good. But that doesn't make the Mets, I mean, that still makes them the third best team in the division right now, the way things are slotted out. And I think by the time the Phillies are done making their moves, they're going to be on par with the rest of these other teams in the division, I hope anyway. John Heyman was reporting tonight that the Braves seem to have Dallas Keuchel atop their wish list. They're looking for a starter, a reliever, and an outfielder.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, they have been linked to guys like A.J. Pollock and Michael Brantley as well. They've been linked to Craig Kimbrell. So they're not done.
Imagine the conniptions if the Braves make a move first during the winter meetings
to secure
a Dallas Keuchel. And then it's like, oh my God, the Nationals got Corbin, the Braves got Keuchel. What is Klentak doing? Yeah. Like as if, you know, there's another guy off the board. If he's off the board, you know, it's because the Phillies didn't want him.
Yeah.
You know,
like
that's also part of
the Phillies can sign as many guys as they want. They can't stop other teams from signing guys too. It's part of the it's part of the deal.
Suddenly everyone's a huge Dallas Keuchel fan. Like he was the only guy that was gonna crap, we really blew it this time.
That's right.
It's like I haven't been thinking, we haven't been talking about Dallas Keuchel at all.
No.
He's so low on our like free agent depth charts. Like, yeah, okay, that would be a fine addition, but there's other pitchers who kind of fit better,
yeah.
who we've been talking about. Yeah. And yeah, that but nevertheless.
Yeah, I know. It's just because he's been pretty good. You're right. It's we've heard of him, and you know, the Phillies didn't get him. The guy you hear the Phillies linked to still is J-Hap, and Jim Salisbury mentioned him. The Phillies would like to add a lefty starter to balance out the rotation. He says the team's interested in Hap. They're also interested in Arizona trade candidate Robbie Ray. I got to throw a little cold water on the Robbie Ray stuff. I talking to Mike Farron last week, he was adamant to me that the team is not looking to move Robbie Ray, that he would be very, very surprised if he basically said the Diamondbacks are not going through a Seattle Mariners-like process. They're not looking to dump every salary. They're looking to move a couple of guys who are going to be free agents soon. But a guy like Robbie Ray, it does not sound like unless the Phillies are willing to give a guy like Rhys Hoskins in a deal for Robbie Ray, he doesn't think Ray is going anywhere. So I'm seeing Ray a lot, and you know, Mike doesn't have, you know, I think he's the pre and post game radio host for the Arizona Diamondbacks. So he knows that he has a pretty good idea what that team's thought process is like, but he's probably not in the war room. So I just have to kind of see what the Diamondbacks do here over the next few days. But Robbie Ray would absolutely be a great addition to this team. I love Robbie Ray. I think that'd be a really good trade. And you know, Madison Bumgarner I was reading tonight, the Giants don't appear to be particularly close to dealing Madison Bumgarner to anyone, but the Phillies have been linked to him as well. And then you have a couple other starters out there. There's the Japanese lefty, Kikuchi. I'm forgetting his first name, but the last name is Kikuchi.
You say.
Yeah, thank you. You say Kikuchi. He seems to be a guy who wants to play on the West Coast. Like so many of these Japanese players, they want to play on the West Coast, and so that's probably where he'll end up, over there somewhere. I'm forgetting another left-hander. Dallas Keuchel, Jay Happ. Well, Charlie Morton's a right-hander who... I guess those are all the left-handed free agent starters that are out there. Wade Miley's a guy who you're not hearing a lot about, and I think he's a guy who's going to last for a while. He didn't pitch a lot last year. I think he only made like 15 or 16 starts for the Brewers, but he's quite a good left-hander. If the Phillies are looking for a guy maybe to get on the cheap a little bit later into the offseason after guys like Happ and Keuchel sign someplace else, Wade Miley is a name to think about as well. But what do you think about the left-handed starters or the starting pitchers? Does it matter to you necessarily that it's a left-handed starter? Like if you had Charlie Morton rated above all those guys, would you still go after Charlie Morton over any of the left-handers?
Yeah, that's something I said earlier in the offseason, and I think Matt Klentak echoed that. It seems like they're softening on it a little bit, saying the original statement of like, look, we're not just going to add a guy because he's a lefty, we're going to add him because he's good for the team.
Right.
So if like there's a right-hander we think that could help us more, we're not going to think about what arm he throws with when we sign him. But it sounds like they're kind of softening on that, where it's like, all right, look, we should at least consider the idea of a left-handed pitcher
yeah.
to give ourselves the option in the rotation, and that's wise. But it feels like forever since they've had somebody throw their left hand on the Phillies rotation. I land on that too. The fact of the matter is though that there's like a lot of good options as far as lefties go who are available. So if this was a market where that like just wasn't the case, no, I wouldn't go like kicking over rocks trying to find a left-handed pitcher just to be able to say they got one. I would definitely think more about improving the team because the rotation's got a lot of, I know people want to, you know, Vince Velasquez and Nick Pivetta, they're going to, the 2019 will be a good season for them. Like they're going to take another step forward. And I think that's totally possible. But if you see a chance to strengthen that rotation to give somebody, to further the Nola Arrieta top of it, which I think isn't as strong a 1-2 punch as it would have been a couple of years ago. And I'm not talking about Nola when I say that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think I'm of the mind that, yeah, let's just improve in general. But fortunately, there are a lot of good options that are lefties out there. And if they add one, I think that would, again, cover more ground in the same way that we're saying the Machado Brantley signings would feel like they would be a little more comprehensively covering issues the Phillies have. I think signing a starter and a lefty, that would be, that would be, I think, more useful for this team moving forward. And that's what they want to do. They want to be deeper. They want to have more talent. They want to be more versatile. And so that's the kind of moves this team makes now.
Yeah. No, getting a left-handed starter would be great because I think Ranger Suarez is the only left-handed starter this team has had since Adam Morgan started a game in 2016. So it's been a little while since they've had an actual good left-handed starter in the rotation.
Brutal.
But again, you just want to get a good pitcher because Arrieta, we don't talk a lot about Jake Arrieta in this rotation. We talk a lot about Pivetta and Velasquez and Eflin, but Arrieta has to be better next year if this team's going to do well. He absolutely has to pitch better. He's going to be a year older, so I don't know how much better we can expect him to pitch, but that's going to be an issue that this team needs a good number two starter. That's why you saw them go so aggressively on Patrick Corbin. I think that they recognize that they're not going to probably get a whole lot more from Jake Arrieta in 2019 than they got this year. And that's a problem. You know, they got to get somebody at the top, near the top of the rotation. Jay Happ would probably fit the bill. I'm a little soured on Dallas Keuchel because he kind of goes up and down from year to year. He's not really consistent. He has Cy Young stuff, obviously being a former Cy Young winner, but he also is a guy who a couple years ago had an ERA over 4.5. I mean, he kind of goes all over the place because he's so dependent on batted ball luck, on having a good defense behind him. Phillies are looking to improve that defense, but if it's anything like what it was last year, Keuchel's going to suffer in playing for Philadelphia. So I like Happ. Happ to me seems to be a guy, Justin, that can pitch into his 40s. You know, he doesn't throw hard. He doesn't throw breaking stuff that you have to snap it off and it's not nasty. He still pitches mostly through deception. It still seems like his fastball, which is not hard, comes on hitters faster. And that seems to me to be a guy who can pitch into his 40s a little bit. And so a 3-year deal for a 36-year-old, ordinarily you would flee from that. But for a guy like Happ, I think I would probably do that because I think he's going to be Jamie Moyer-esque. I don't think he's going to last as long as Moyer and last as long as Bartolo Colon, but I could easily see Happ being a guy who's still pitching pretty well at age 41, 42. What do you think?
Yeah, I think less about dominance, more about deception, and I think that's the kind of guy you worry less about wear and tear. Because he's not blowing himself up every time he goes into his delivery. So, yeah, I think that's easily seeable that he's pitching in until there's a nice patch of gray on either side of his head. But I think that's totally accurate. However, that's you know, if we're talking about Jamie Moyer types, that's the kind of guy who's going to go out and get blown up two or three starts in a row just because his slider isn't sliding or his cutter isn't cutting and some lineups just got a good beat on him. So, you know, that's the kind of just a risk you're taking with a guy who relies more on deception than overpowering hitters. But I mean, you brought up Arrieta. I did want to mention too that like we think about this rotation as having I don't know if you want to say three open slots, three slots that about which there are questions to be answered. And the other two being like locked in is kind of like because you're right. If Jake Arrieta, obviously Aaron Nola is fine, but Jake Arrieta really did not dominate for a lot of last season. He had a really great, I believe it was June. He had May. It was May. I've said that every time that it's June, but it's May. In May, he had an ERA under one. In June, he had an ERA over 6.5.
Yeah, right.
So he bottomed out there, and then he had a great July, and then, you know, not particularly good August or September. In the second half, his ERA was 5.04. Like, he was not a good pitcher for the Phillies in the back half of the season. And that is, you know, I guess that's just not something that was so much of a problem or a concern that it was going to be like addressed. But he needs to be better. There needs to be something there he's somebody who will improve with a better defense as well. But, you know, that is also an issue. It's just that, you know, there's other things on this front office's mind right now, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's some bigger fish to fry. And I think the fish that we're not talking a lot about, and we'll finish up the winter meeting stuff with this, and then we'll get into the Hall of Fame vote here in just a few minutes. But we saw how much of an issue the Phillies had at the back of the bullpen last year with the closer position, how many games they blew late, how many wins they threw away. And when we're talking about trades the Phillies could make and free agents they could sign at the winter meetings, we focus on the starting pitching. We obviously are focusing on Harper and Machado because Harper and Machado are the two most important players in this entire offseason. The Phillies have to get one of these guys in order for people not to see this as a failure of an offseason. But that being said, this team really does need a closer. They need somebody in the back of the bullpen who has pitched in the ninth innings before. And we hear them linked to Zach Britton or Andrew Miller. Not hearing so much about Craig Kimbrell anymore with the Phillies. It's mostly Britton and Miller. I think they, again, are intrigued by getting a left-handed relief pitcher in the back of the bullpen. They've made a couple trades in these last couple of days, Justin, in which they got a couple of lefties in the bullpen, but none of them are marquee guys. Maybe one of them can be a loogie somewhere along the line, but these are not guys where you bring them in and you think, yeah, this lefty has no chance. With a guy like Zach Britton or Andrew Miller, you have a guy like that and guys who also have closed games in the ninth inning. Britton probably more than Miller as a closer type player. Miller would be a guy who, again, would be the fireman, would be able to pitch in multiple different innings, but you're probably bringing Britton along to be your closer if you go out and sign him. One guy that hasn't gotten mentioned a whole lot is Dave Robertson, who has a lot of experience closing, has terrific numbers over these last few years. If the Phillies really just wanted a ninth inning guy, I would think Robertson would be a guy that they would seriously have to look at because he's been healthy. He hasn't had these stretches where he blows up one year and then he's really good the next year. He's been pretty consistent and has a lot of good closing experience. I think people are sleeping on Robertson as a closer, Justin.
Yeah, you're right. He's one of the more consistent options out there, even as he's aged into his mid-30s. It's really more about, like, is he going to be effective or really good? You know, like his floor, like we're saying about Machado, his floor is just higher as far as late inning relievers go. And it would be, depending on what they give up, but this Phillies team has been very good about what it's given up for the acquisitions it's made thus far. So depending on what they give up, this would be a pretty good get for them. I think because we've done this trying to fill the closer role in house for too long now. Like, you know, we weren't excited when they signed Papelbon, but like, you were kind of like, okay, so the ninth inning's taken care of. We've been on this ride so much with Genmar Gomez and Hector Neris, a couple of experiments in between, that it's just like, yeah, all right, look, if we're out there spending money, then, you know, I don't like spending a ton of money on a closer, but if this is if this team is going to be the type of team they're saying they're going to be, then it's the right team to spend money on a closer. Like, it's not a waste of money to have Jonathan Papelbon on your team when you're actually contending for something. When you're bottoming out and finishing in fourth in the division and just sucking, then it makes no sense to have him there. But this is going to be the kind of team that needs somebody to nail down that ninth inning. The Phillies can't, even just by the law of averages, lose as many games in the ninth inning as they lost in 2018 next year. So right. They'll have that going for them as well. But I don't want to have to rely on that. You know, something tells me I don't want to have to rely on luck as far as the closer's role goes. So yeah, I think Robertson would be a great guy to take a look at. Absolutely.
And I would be fine with Britton or Miller, I think. And I'd actually be okay with Kimbrel, too. Those guys all have big negatives attached to them. And saw a report tonight. There are about 6 to 8 teams expressing interest in David Robertson. Among them, the Dodgers, Red Sox, Mets. Philly's not mentioned among any of those teams, so it's not entirely... not looking exactly like the Phillies are in on him. It sounds like they're more interested in Britton or Miller, at least according to Jim Salisbury.
I'm just saying, if you're signing a closer or a relief pitcher of any kind, then you got to understand the volatility of signing a reliever. Like, just that these are the guys who have the roles that change so dramatically. The guys that only pitch in high pressure situations when everyone's at their most worked up and have their strongest reactions to, usually when the game is on the line, and like relievers, just year to year, something's off in their delivery. Some they're tipping their pitches. Yeah. You know, they just didn't quite get into the flow of it in spring training, and now they're out of time. You know, there's always that gamble. So you got to just understand that when you're signing a relief pitcher.
Hey, they all come. Tommy Hunter's a great Tommy Hunter's a great example. In 2017, his cutter was getting every left-hander out. In 2018, he could not get his cutter in as much to left-handers. It was leaving it over the plate all year and got hammered. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what relievers are. You're right.
Every reliever comes with baggage, whether we know about it or not. That's what I'm saying.
Yep, no, absolutely. So, and don't forget, folks, trades too. The Phillies have some guys in their own team that they could trade, that they're frankly look to move in order to make space for different guys. I think Michael Franco, there's a good chance he gets moved this week. I think there's a good chance that they'll have conversations at least about finding takers for Cesar Hernandez or for Adonis Medina as part of maybe a blockbuster to bring somebody else in. The Phillies have already managed to get rid of Carlos Santana and move a little bit of and I think they want to look into the market to try and move Tommy Hunter and Pat Neshek as well to totally revamp the back of that bullpen. So there are some guys that that could leave the team that have been a part of this core for a while that could be on their way out the door here at the winter meetings or even shortly after the winter meetings. We find a lot of deals happen in the week or two after the winter meetings because the conversations get started this week. So again, don't be freaked out. I'll be a little bit nervous if the team doesn't get some things done here during the winter meetings, but also have to understand that this also is a setup for some conversations that'll take place over the next week or two also. I think that's a pretty good little preview of the winter meetings. And of course, we'll do bonus podcasts. Either I will do them or me and Justin or me, Justin and Liz or Justin and Liz, whatever. If the Phillies make moves this week, we'll be getting you some bonus content to give you our analysis and our take on any moves the Phillies make here during the winter meetings, whether it's on hit and season or continued success. But let's talk about the Hall of Fame vote that took place. I don't know, a lot of people didn't maybe realize that there was a Hall of Fame vote taking place today, but this was a vote not by the Baseball Writers Association of America. There's a second vote that happens every year by what's called the Today's Game Era Committee, also known as like the Veterans Committee. And you don't have to get 75% of the vote from writers. This is all just... people who are associated with the Hall of Fame, and I don't even exactly know how this group is made up, or I think it's just like 15 votes or 16 votes. This is actually, you need 12 of 16 votes in order to get elected into the Hall of Fame from this Veterans Committee. And two players were voted in this year, Harold Baines and Lee Smith. Now, I think most people believe Lee Smith is a fine choice to get in. He came close a number of times to getting in, but never quite made it. Generally regarded as one of the best closers of the 1970s and 1980s, stretching into the early to mid-1990s as well. He had a very long career. Smith was one of the most dominant closers. That's fine. The guy that everybody seems to have a problem with right now is Harold Baines, who had a good career. I think he had over 2,800 hits, had a career OPS over 800, but he had a 38.7 career wins above replacement in 22 years of play, Justin. Compare that to Dale Murphy, who never came close to making the Hall of Fame, had a 45.6 career WAR and two MVP awards in 18 years. And the guy that I really want to focus on, I know you really want to focus on as well, is former Phillies great Dick Allen, who in 15 years, so that's seven fewer years than Harold Baines, had a 58.7 WAR, 20 more wins above replacement than Harold Raines in seven fewer seasons, and he is still on the outside looking in. Now, Justin, we can look at this one of two ways. One, Harold Baines getting in is a travesty, and I think it probably is. Matter of fact, it is. It's a travesty, Harold Baines getting into the Hall of Fame, but it also lowers the floor and makes for a better argument for guys like Dick Allen to get in future years, like Jimmy Rollins maybe to get in future years, Chase Utley, any Phillies players kind of on the fringe. Better odds, better chances, better arguments. You can point to and say, hey, Harold Baines got in. Why not Dick Allen? Why not Jimmy Rollins? What do you think?
All right, so my feelings.
Break it down.
My feelings on the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame is over for me. I don't want to just sit here and say I don't care, because my feelings about it are a little deeper than that. Because it kind of comes down to something you and I wrote together a couple of years ago, which was about Curt Schilling getting into the Hall of Fame, and my entire argument was basically that, like, you know, if I don't know what the deal is with the character clause, if it's a thing, when writers want it to be a thing, if it even exists, I don't know, because there's plenty of examples that prove that there's no sort of character measuring contest when we're talking about guys getting into the Hall of Fame. My whole argument was that Curt Schilling has gone out of his way to paint a version of himself in his post-playing career that is so monstrously ignorant and terrible that he tries to reach into the world and do, you know, a lot of actual harm. And I was saying that I don't care what he did as a player. I think he shouldn't get in for that reason. And that's why I focus much more on, I care as I've become an adult baseball fan, I care so much more about who the players are as people. Like, I'm not somebody who goes looking for players' personal lives, but if they go out of their way to show who they are, whether that's good or bad, that matters to me, because, you know, you like seeing that. You like having players who are good people, or just reasonable people, not hateful people. And I bring this up because anything that undermines the sanctimony of the Hall of Fame, I greatly enjoy, actually. So that this was, Trevor and I talk about this on the Dirty Inning a lot, because cronyism and how the idea of, like, all these, we debate so much about, oh, you're voting for Clemens but not Bonds, or you only filled out one name for some dumb reason when you should, there's like more than 10 deserving candidates, and this endless debate about the 75% and, oh my god, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, one of these committees can just come in like a wrecking ball and be like, Harold Baines in, Lee Smith in, just because they want to, just because they played with him and like him. Like, that's great to me. I think that's hilarious. Absolutely. Undermine the entire process. These guys are,
like, what's the point of having both? You know what I mean? Like, it should be one or the other, right?
And that's that. Yeah. So I don't see it. I can't possibly see it as a bad thing. I see it as like a funny thing. It's like, Harold Baines is in the Hall of Fame. Great. What a day for Harold Baines. He must be so excited. That's so cool. You think he ever thought, yeah, Hall of Fame, definitely. He had a really good career. You're right. That's something I don't like, is that this is going to be a lot of people scoffing at Harold Baines' career when he had like a really, really good career. I don't think the Hall of Fame needs to be as elite as they kind of make it seem. Like, yeah, if this is part of the process, then it's not. It's not the people making that Hall of Very Good joke all the time. Like, no, I don't know what to tell you. It's the Hall of Harold Baines now. And he's not the worst player in the Hall of Fame by far. So if this is part of the process, then it's already not an elite competition. And for Dick Allen not to be in is a joke. Like, that is very silly. We don't need to go down. We can, but we don't need to cite Dick Allen's stats. We all know he was a total monster. His career being abbreviated is obviously a factor. But honestly, you go to his memoirs, they ask him about the Hall of Fame. And he kind of lands where I do, because he says, I don't care about the Hall of Fame. I do care about getting to heaven. Given the choice, I'll take heaven every time. Now, I'm not going to go, you know, all the way to heaven with it. But my point of, you know, I care more about being just like a good person. I don't care about getting into this like special club that baseball writers get to decide whether I get into, or like guys who played with me get to decide I get into. And that's where I'm at. Like, nothing's going to change Dick Allen's stats. It would be vindicating to see him get in, and you know, he deserves to be in, and I would celebrate it if he did. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't color my favorite players or the players from the Phillies who had such tremendous careers any differently, whether they're in or not in the Hall of Fame. My feelings about Jimmy Rollins aren't going to change if he doesn't get in the Hall. Yeah. I wrote about Charlie Manuel, who was who came, you know, he got less than 5 votes. He was on the same ballot. I wrote about it, putting him in the Hall of Fame. My argument was basically because it would make people happy, because nobody doesn't want it. Like, who wouldn't be overjoyed to see Charlie Manuel get in the Hall of Fame? And if your argument is, well, because it lowers the bar up, the bar is low, guys. It's a pretty low bar. Curt Schilling's in the Hall of Fame. That's a pretty low bar.
Well, he's not there yet.
Oh, right,
but
right. Kurt Schilling's going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think that's inevitable, and he's a pretty bad guy. So,
yeah, I mean, it really does matter. It depends on what you think of the Hall of Fame, whether it's something that you like. I think what's frustrating for baseball fans is it's always been a fun thing to debate: is somebody a Hall of Famer or not?
Is it fun? That's part of the reason why I don't take it seriously, because it's not fun anymore. People are so there's so much vitriol and so much hate and just anger about it. It's like this is a baseball
museum.
I think
it used to be fun.
Yeah.
I think it used to be fun because you didn't have the battle between the old school guys and the new metrics. And so there was more general consensus as to what the Hall of Famers were. You looked at certain milestone numbers, and if guys met those numbers, they were in. If they had a certain number of MVP seasons, they were in. You didn't have the WARs and the JAWs and a lot of the different numbers, the weighted runs created and the OPS pluses and all that stuff, where you could take a look and really get a better sense of who was really good and who wasn't. And so I think that's what's really made this. A, social media has made the Hall of Fame conversation no fun at all, because arguing about sports on Twitter is not a lot of fun at all anymore. When you used to just sit around with your buddies in a bar and compare compare Schilling with Messina, you could have a fun argument talking about it like that, because that's how people used to have sports arguments. But now that's not the way it's done anymore. It's a little bit more mean-spirited, and so part of that is I think is why the Hall of Fame voting and why talking about it isn't as interesting anymore. And if you are a player who does want to get into the Hall of Fame, and I think most players would love to be a Hall of Famer and say, yeah, I'm a Hall of Famer, it's getting harder and harder to know what you have to do, what you have to be in order to do that. Basically, I think players are just coming to the realization, I got to play the best I can, I got to have the best career I can, I got to help my team win the best I can, and at the end of the day, whatever happens, happens. You know, is Chase Utley going to be a Hall of Famer? I don't know. I'd love to see Chase Utley in the Hall of Fame. I thought it was really cool when Richie Ashburn finally got into the Hall of Fame a few years ago. I thought that was so well-deserved. He seemed to really love it. It seemed like a great thing to happen to a Phillies icon. And that's why, those are some of the reasons why I've always been interested in the Hall of Fame. But you're right, it's not a fun thing right now, this debate about it. And for situations like this, too, where you see basically Harold Bain gets in because he had some buddies on the committee. That's what it is. Yeah. That's how he got in.
I love that. So, I love just like, you know, guys, friends, just like, yeah, let's vote Harold in this year. This will be hilarious.
Yeah. Can you believe it? Oh my gosh, we're going to hear about this forever. And one last thing before we wrap up here, and this will be just a real quick aside. The Phillies, as you know, are going to open up ESPN's Sunday Night Baseball schedule against the Braves next year, first game of the 2019 season, and it's not going to be at 8 o'clock or 8:10 or 8:20, whenever the hell it is they start Sunday night games. They're moving up the start time of Sunday night baseball to 7 o'clock. I think ESPN was really kind of tired of having games end at midnight and 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. I think understanding most people don't want to stay up for games that run that late. So I love it. And I during the NFL, we know when the two seasons kind of collide with each other, it doesn't really matter anyway. Start the baseball game at 7 o'clock. You get a jump on the NFL for an hour and a half. You know, I mean, it's maybe you get some people to watch the first few innings of the baseball game as they wait for the Sunday night football game to come on. I think it's smart. For Major League
Baseball. I love late night baseball. I was overjoyed at the it was the World Series game, right? That went until like 3 a.m. That's for some reason that really just appeals to me. If I have an excuse to open another beer,
wait till you have kids, man.
Like 1:30 a.m. Oh yeah, we're coming at this with two very different perspectives, and I understand that. Sleep being a much more precious commodity in your line of work. But at the same time, this is universally, I know this is an improvement. And also, it's just kind of like nice to see baseball address an actual problem for people and like fix it, basically, which, you know, in record time, mm-hmm. they didn't have to experiment. Like, it feels like the baseball method would be like, oh, people don't like when the game started at 8, huh? Why don't we just move it to 2 in the afternoon, see how that works? And then over the course of several years, we'll try some stuff out in the Arizona Fall League with different start times. And then we'll start it at 4:30 one year just to see what that's like. And we'll run some tests and then we'll decide. They're like, no, just fix the problem. Let's just move it back an hour. And hey, solid. Everybody's happy. It's just wild to see them fix something like that. That was an actual issue for fans. So yay. Maybe this is a very small step in the right direction.
Good job, ESPN. You didn't make a horrible decision for once. All right. Well, listen, it's going to get real here over these next few days. We're going to see a ton of rumors. And this is also going to be an exhausting week, gang, because you are going to see a ton of rumors. And you're probably going to see one reporter saying one thing and another reporter contradicting that thing, probably in response to the first thing, and an agent calling that second reporter and saying, no, say this, or here's what's actually happening, even though it may not actually be happening. Because in this situation, I think the reporters are doing their best. They're relaying information as they get it from connected people inside the industry, and reporting information that way is totally legit. Just, I think with this whole thing, we'll be passing along the rumors. If you follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue, if you follow me on Twitter at John Stolness, any of the Good Fight writers, basically, if you're involved in Philly's Twitter at all, you're going to know every rumor that's going on. I feel bad for Chris Jones at Long_Drive. Justin, he's been kind of really riding the waves here with this hot stove season so far. I'm a little bit concerned for his safety because...
Oh, yeah, I mean, Chris goes through it. That's just his brand.
That's his brand. No doubt about it.
When it gets just too hot, you got to turn him on mute for an hour or two just to let him cool off.
I love Chris. But yeah, man, he definitely is putting his hands right on the hot stove. So, but you're going to see a lot of rumors coming down. It may get exhausting and contradictory, but try and take it in the spirit in which it's intended. This is a fun week if you like to follow baseball, and the Phillies are more active here at the winter meetings than they have been really in 7-8 years or maybe even longer than that. So gear up, everybody. Some moves are coming, hopefully, in free agency or in trades. And we will, again, have you updated with bonus podcasts and episodes of continued success and hit and season over the next weeks and days. And that'll do it for episode number 238 of Hit and Season. My thanks to Justin Clue for being a Sunday Night Podcast pal once again. Folks, if you haven't done so yet, make sure that you subscribe to the Good Fight Podcast feed on Apple Podcasts. Leave a rating and a review while you're there. We've got about 300 ratings now on Apple Podcasts, so that's fantastic. Please keep them coming, and I'll read some more of your reviews, the best reviews as they come in on the next edition of Hit and Season. Also, check out the Patreon, patreon.com/hitandseason, where we have some bonus content up on there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hit and Season.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.